superconductors in the body. In other words, you've got a light body as well as a physical body. Okay, let's go to the next one. So it's the philosopher saying, we knew that all along, didn't we? Okay. Anyway, this is the Body Electric, Bob Becker. And then I'm going to lay this one on you, people. This is out of his book. I'm going to let you read it for yourself. You've already read it, huh? Okay. Dadgum didn't teach you anything. Anyway, he found that by putting red blood cells, he could apply this current through the red blood cells, and he can convert normal red blood cells all the way down to primitive or fetal tissue. Undifferentiated tissue that is available for the DNA to assign to become new hair, new lungs, new heart, new skin, new bones, anything you want. And it's coming from red blood cells. And how did he get it? By applying 200 to 700 picoamps. Picoamps, 1/1 billionth of an amp. 200 to 700 1/1 billionth of an amp. And you convert red blood cells to undifferentiated tissue. So if your consciousness is your light body, then your consciousness of the light body can make fetal tissue that can regenerate anything. Okay. I want to give you some of the same information we talked about last time, but I do want to develop it a little further because I'm finding out after listening to these tapes how far you've gone with this. Once again, this is differential thermoanalysis performed by Allied Signal. This is actually the temperature of the pan heated to 850 degrees, and this is the amount of temperature that emits off this pan when you heat it. They actually have a detector that measures the heat coming off the pan. Anyway, this is really important, and this is a little simple chart, but it's really important to understand, is that when you put our powder, and this is actually iridium hydride, in the pan, and you start heating it, this heat right here is the differential of the heat coming out of our sample versus the pan. So there is an exothermal reaction when you begin to heat it. But when you heat it at 10 degrees per minute, by 400 degrees, all of the hydrogen is gone. So at 400 degrees, we got no more hydrogen. Everything's just rosy now. It basically stays the same as the pan up to right here. Now, 762 degrees, it deflects again. Now, this is really important to see this, people. This is a very important piece of science I'm showing you. This is called a phase change. Okay? Now, the phase change is really important, as most of you already know. I didn't know you knew this, so But in science, when a superconductor begins to superconduct, it must expel from the sample all of the external magnetic fields, or it can't become a superconductor. It must expel those from the sample. And all of a sudden you see heat coming out of it because it's expelling all these internal magnetic fields that have to come out. So it can become this quantal oneness of the superconductor. So all these external fields have to be pushed out, and so you see it as heat. It's called a phase change. Now that's really important that that happens because that's when it turns white. So it goes through a phase change. There's no chemistry here. It just goes through this phase change and gives off heat. And it turns white. Now let's go to the next slide. Now this is really important. This is our differential thermoanalysis I was telling you about earlier, where we actually heated the sample and we're heating it at 1.2 degrees per minute. This is very, very, very slow. By the time we get up to about 140, 50 degrees, it's given up all its hydrogen. If I heat at 10 degrees, it'd be 400 degrees before you give up the hydrogen. But I'm heating it real slow, not at 10 degrees, but at 1.2 degrees per minute. So by the time we get to this point here, we've given up all our hydrogen. And so this extra weight here is all gone. And from here on, it's basically stable. And then we get right over here, and it starts... Right here, once again, we're at 640, 50 degrees, which in the other sample is 762 degrees, but we're going slower, so that happens a lot sooner occurrence, you see it. But it literally just tails off of here. So this is when it's turning white, is it loses the weight. Now, it's real important for you also to understand that when you look at this material here under a microscope, you see that it isn't pure hydrogen iodide. There's a whole bunch that's already gone white, but you don't see it with the naked eye unless you look under a microscope. But if you know how much iridium you started with, and you get down to here, you find that this is exactly 56% of the beginning weight. Now, every element, whether it be osmium, ruthenium, palladium, platinum, iridium, rhodium, they all go to 56%. And then when they get out of that point, they just kind of settle out and they just go flat. They don't get any lighter anymore. It's at 56%. It's just stable. But it's snow white. All this is real important. Let's go to the next slide. Now, we start cooling it, and the machine re-equilibrates at 100%. So now we start here. This is now 100%, and we cool it down. And look at this. If you see, every time it builds and collapses, and builds and collapses, and builds and collapses, and builds and collapses, it builds over time. Now we're actually cooling at 2 degrees per minute. So between here and here, it's about 350 degrees to over 600 degrees. There's probably 250 degrees here at 2 degrees per minute, or it's about 2 hours. 2 hours worth of time between here and here. And it goes up there, and right back down. So it goes to 150, 200, 250, about 300%. Now, if the beginning weight was 100%, we're down to 56%, then that means at about 155, 60%, we're back to the original weight. So where the heck did it go up here? It doesn't make any sense at all. And then it finally settles down. Other than this one little hiccup right here, it's pretty decent. So, you know, this was so interesting. We said, well, let's just keep on doing this. If it's doing this, and there's all this crazy thing going on, let's heat it again. So we heat it again. Now we heat it. We get it at 100%. Another than a few hiccups here. But then look at this one. Goes down to like 20% of the beginning weight. It's actually where it gets down to at one point. Now, how do I explain how it goes probably 50 degrees at 1.2 degrees, or it's about 40 minutes? 40 minutes time between here and here. How do you explain that? And notice every one of these are building over time and then collapsing straight up, and they're building over time, collapsing straight up. It's kind of like a sawtooth. It runs at an angle and then it collapses. And it runs at an angle and it collapses. And it runs at an angle and it collapses. Let's go to the next one. Let's cool this son of a gun down and see what it does now. I do understand there's where we started it. That's where 100% becomes, but we're floating at that point. So, you know, there's where we should have started, but it's down here, so now it's offset. You see, this stuff's just like sawtooth everywhere. There's no explanation for this. There's no way you can explain how it can weigh more than it weighed before we started. And the obvious conclusion you come to is this isn't weighable. It's a magnetic material interacting with a magnetic field. It's the only explanation you got for it. So let's look at this next one. Now, this is the one that really blew our mind. Here we begin at 56% and everything is rosy, and then goes a few of these things. But look at this. And look at this one. This goes down right about here someplace. Well, this is zero here. So down here is 10% less than nothing. Now, even more remarkable is when it gets up to this temperature, you look in the pan and there's nothing in the pan. There's nothing there. And then yet you start cooling back down in the next slide. And as soon as you start cooling it back down, then it starts reappearing, and somewhere along about here, it's back in the pan again. Now look at this one here. Golly. Here's what? 710 degrees to 350, and that's like 350. Gosh darn. That's 2 hours and 30 minutes or something. And where does that thing go? If you project it up to here, someplace right about there, before it collapses. Well, that's, what, 600-700%? It makes no sense at all. This is a microbalance. It can measure down into fractions of a milligram. And look at this thing. It's crazy. It makes no sense at all. And so this is where I came up with the concept of the superconductivity. I said it's levitating on the magnetic field of this machine. Once again, now look, it's doing it again. It's less than zero. In other words, if it wasn't in the pan would weigh zero. But because it's in the pan doesn't even weigh zero. Right. It's causing the pan to levitate. And yet if you look at the pan, it isn't even there. And it's causing the pan to levitate. Right, let's go to the next one. Anyway, if you notice here, every time we heat and cool this, this fluctuation occurs further and further towards ambient temperature. Do you notice that? We used to end out here, then we got the end here, then we started in here. You see it now, by reheating and annealing, we're actually getting it to occur more and more and more easily. It's coming all the way down to ambient temperature. Anyway, here's an article, The Classical Vacuum. It is not empty. Even when all matter and heat radiation have been removed from a region of space, the vacuum of classical physics remains filled with a distinctive pattern of electromagnetic fields. In other words, you pump all heat out, you take all matter out, you get it totally empty, where there's nothing, and then you create a vacuum in that, and then you get heat. Energy comes out of the nothing. Now, we used to call it the ether, turn of the century, and then Einstein came out with theory of relativity, and we kind of did away with the ether. Well, it's back again, people. But now they call it zero-point energy or vacuum energy. I know, you know all about it. Anyway, I'm going to show you some things about it. Let's go to the next one. Out of this article, there's two things that are very important. First of all, here's a theoretically perfect cylinder. You have this perfect cylinder in the vacuum. No matter, nothing at all, but it's a perfect cylinder that's totally depressed. If you withdraw that piston in nothingness and then try to recompress it, it won't recompress. The energy has actually appeared from nowhere. Okay, that's proof that there's energy in the vacuum. It came from nothing. Now, if you plot the frequency of the vacuum energy versus the frequency of the thermal energy, you can see the two of them aren't the same. This one's on this side of 20, and this one's about 30. The two don't agree. These are frequency and hertz, and they don't agree. There's actually a difference with the vacuum energy versus the compression energy. They're not exactly the same. Just like you look at the electromagnetic spectra, and you have absorption emission and emission, and they're not the same. When you analyze the spectra, absorption and emission spectra are different. They're almost the same, they're not quite. Okay, let's go to the next. They're actually plotting zero-point radiation. The really thing you've got to understand that's really important, people, is when you plot light frequency, depending on whether the light is coming towards you or the light is going away, is whether you have what's called a red shift or a blue shift. And whether the light's coming towards you, it actually tends to compress, and as you go away, it tends to recede, and it actually shifts the frequency. When you understand that the zero-point frequency never shifts, because in the zero-point there is no distance and there is no time. Okay, now, when I talk to you, I'm going to talk about fourth dimension and fifth dimension. Fourth dimension for me is time. Fifth dimension is this other dimension. It's everywhere in the universe. Every moon, every sun, every star, every planet, every galaxy is running on the zero point. And yet the zero point has no distance and it has no time. I know it's really hard for us to fathom how all of this could be joined at some point. This is really profound because this is new understanding in science. It's old understanding of philosophy, this new understanding of science, that this is where it all joins. And through this dimension, there is no distance between you and someone else on the other side of the world. You are connected to this dimension. That's really hard for most people to understand. If you understand it, hats off to you. Most people have a hard time accepting that. What you have to understand is this is physics. Okay, this is hard science. There is a connection between all matter, every proton, every neutron, and every electron, in all the atoms of all the universe, of all the world, are interacting through a dimension where there is no distance or any time. So this is zero-point radiation. When you take thermal radiation and overlap it with zero-point radiation, you find that there's a little area down here where it actually overlaps. That thermal radiation actually overlaps with zero-point radiation. And so by heating our material, we're actually putting energy into the zero-point. You understand why? Because there's this overlap right here. And so, what we're talking about here is when we heated our material, everywhere in the sample has to have a single frequency light. Everywhere in the sample, it's all one wave, everywhere. You cannot have partial waves. And so what it does is the Meissner field builds and builds and builds because you're putting zero-point energy in it until it gets enough energy, it can pop into the sample one complete wave. And it pops it in. And then you continue heating. It builds and builds and builds. It gets enough energy, can pop in another wave. And it pops in one complete wave. And it begins to build again. And so what you get in a system of Josephson junction, which is a superconductor, you literally get it going in increments of energy. It pops it in as one complete wave each time. And so what you'll see is the field will build and then collapse, then build, collapse, and build and collapse. Exactly what we saw. And then as you cool it down, it will let the energy out by building the other direction and collapsing and building the other direction and collapsing and building the other direction and collapsing until it's back down at room temperature. So what we were seeing is exactly what we should have seen for it to be a superconductor. But it's a Josephson junction superconductor. Now let's put this one on. Okay, right here, Max Planck was working with this. He found black body radiation had a peak. He found that the sun's radiation has a peak. Now this is on a logarithmic scale. All this is in logarithms. So you know, you see 1.6, 0.4, 0.1, and 1.1. It actually is spread out as logarithms. So they really begin real short here and then spread out. So by putting all this on a logarithmic scale, it spreads out these peaks a long ways. But what I want you to see is here at on a logarithmic scale, right here is half. If you follow this up, right up here, right here, people, is the vibrational frequency of water. There, 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 and there. Right here between these two is where we call the electromagnetic zero point. This is where you will find its production at the electromagnetic zero point, or right here. It comes up and it agrees with the molecular frequency of water. Okay, now this is very important when you understand that the body is primarily made up of water. It also is very important to me because I understand from talking to Jay-Z that Ramtha has told her that the water in her body is part of the way he communicates with her. It's through the water. That the energy comes to her through the water. Which just happens to be where you find this spectra. You can't see it on the chart here, but you actually get down here and you follow this on down through the electromagnetic zero point and you end up down here where the electromagnetic spectra comes. It actually ends right there. And that's where it turns around and goes back. That is where the zero point is. We'll actually show it to you on the other graphs more, but I wanted to show you this water spectra because it's depicted on this graph. And that's just a blow up of one of the charts I have. Here is actual Max Planck's information that he published in 1906. This is the solar energy curve. And this is not a logarithmic chart. And here's the black body radiation, which the energy comes out of a perfectly absorbing black body. And it really frustrated Max Planck because he found that when this energy came up, why didn't it continue on smoothly and come down over here? Why did it just come up like this and collapse? And why did it come up over here and collapse? And it really frustrating why this collapse occurs right here. You know, why he couldn't reconcile those two curves. Why they just didn't continue on a nice smooth curve. And what he came up with to explain this is he came up with two things. One's called little h, or Max Planck's constant. And what he had to do is he had to get from right there to right there. Well, he had to get from that peak to that peak. And it didn't fit. So he stuck in Planck's constant. And that's the fudge factor that completed the formula. Now this is the truth, people. This is the way it came up with it. This, up to the day he died, Max Planck could not tell you why you had to use Planck's constant. Honest to gosh, he did not know the day he died. He just knew that if he didn't use it, if he didn't use Planck's constant, the formula doesn't work. And the reason it didn't work is there was this hole between there and there. He just had to build a little bridge to get from there to there. And so thus he sticks in Planck's constant, which is the correcting factor. You stick that in, the formula works. If you use it, it works. It's like balancing your checkbook by sticking 23 cents in it. How many of you have done that? Oh, it's not worth the trouble. Just stick it in there. We'll balance the checkbook. Well, that's what he did. Planck's constant balanced the checkbook. But he never did explain why you had to have a balance in there. Why is this hole here? Why does everything collapse there? But he had a way of explaining it. He said, we're going to use the world of the quanta. And in the world of the quanta, he says, you have quantum oscillators. And this is where you find one electron right here. He says, what happens is in the world of the quanta, the electron continually dipping into the vacuum and returning back out, and dipping in the vacuum and returning back out. Or it's an oscillator that when it's moving, you know exactly where it is, but when it stops, you don't know where it is. And then it starts moving again, you know where it is, and when it stops, you don't know where it is. And it's when you don't know where it is, so it can be anywhere in the universe. And so when you don't know where it is, he says, we actually are going to say that a light particle actually comes in quanta. So we're going to call it a photon, not a phonon. So these photons are in a minute burst of light, and when it's gone, we don't know where it is. It just disappears. There it's gone, there it's gone, there it's gone, there it's gone. Well, what it is, people, it's disappearing into this dimension. And nothing can exist there. Okay, nothing can exist there. You just come up to it, and everything just drops off, like a chasm. Nothing can exist there.